I'm not here in my, oh, there we go. There I am. I hear myself too much, but anyway. We kicked off our stewardship campaign looking at how our perception of who God is, the images that we're comfortable with, the way we interact with who God we believe to be, will affect our stewardship. And when I say stewardship, I'm talking about all of those things that God has entrusted to you. So it's not just money, it's not just possessions, although that is obviously the first things that, and some of the biggest stumbling blocks that we have in our faith. But stewardship is all of those things that God has given us as a gift and to take care of, because a steward, as we know, is one who takes care of another's property. And as Christians, we believe that everything we have, including the very breath in our bodies, has been given to us by God. And so stewardship can include a far-ranging list of things that are within our care during our lifetime to take care of that God has entrusted to us. And so that first week we looked at how our attitude about God and who God is can affect how we take care of the things that we are to steward. So if we believe that God is a mean tyrant up there sitting in the heavens waiting to pummel you when you make a mistake, then you're going to steward the things that you have before you a different way than maybe if you look at God as a shepherd or as your friend or as a loving father in those kinds of terms. And so recognizing kind of the position you come at can be a really powerful tool in understanding the stewardship of what you have. And then last week we looked at how our relationship with God, also we have a perception of that, our actual living relationship with God that can affect our stewardship. And we looked at that through the light of the prodigal son story. And we saw these two sons who both found themselves enslaved because in some ways it was because of the relationship, it was entirely because of the relationship they had with their father and how they perceived their father's even expectations of them. And we really didn't get into much of that, but you have the one brother who rebelled against what he believed the father's demands were, and he rebelled and cut the father out of any stewardship of what his inheritance was, and he ended up a slave, eating pig slop, and ending up coming back to his father for help. The other brother was also enslaved, but he was enslaved from this expectation that his father had all these obligations upon his life that he was enslaved to, and it did not bring him joy, and he too used the language of slavery, that he was enslaved. And so we don't want to be on either ends of those spectrum. We don't want to be in rebellion, and we don't want to be the one that's the suffering, you know, suffering servant who is serving God but isn't finding any joy in that process because of obligations. And so today we're actually going to continue thinking about perceptions, because how we perceive things makes a big difference in how we live our life. And so today we're going to think about our perception of our wealth, our perception of our stuff, our perception of who we are in the world and the status that we carry in relation to the things that we would claim as our own. And we're going to think about the perception of that. Now, I don't know about you, but I grew up on a farm, so I grew up with a barn. Anybody else here grow up with a barn on their farm? Maybe you still have a barn. So for some of you, this is going to be literal, and some of you, it's going to be metaphorical, so we'll let you decide which one it is. But I grew up on a farm with a barn, and it's kind of not a farm without one, right? My dad always says that. It's not really a farm without a barn, but you know, my dad bought our farm from my grandparents, who bought it from some other people, and so our farm was over 100 years old when I was growing up on it, and the barn had been used all those years, and, you know, it wasn't the best barn out there, but it was in pretty good shape. My dad kept our hay bales in it, and he could bring cattle into the bottom of the barn in the cold if he needed to bring animals in out from the weather. And he was able, when he upgraded to his Massey Ferguson 1150, he was able to fit it on one side of the barn, and the hay wagon was on the other side. Until, thank you, Lord Jesus, he bought a big baler. So we were done with making those little bales. And I never could lift those anyway. I was always crookedly driving the tractor and getting yelled at when I wasn't going in a nice straight line. But my dad bought a baler, so that became, you know, that was what was now housed in the barn. And the wagon just had to go outside. Well, over the course of my lifetime, I'm 48, so over the course of my lifetime, what had been the main staple of a farm's workspace had really become obsolete, at least on our farm, because it was what? Too small. It wasn't big enough to handle where the equipment to run a farm had gone. Can you fit a combine in a barn that's 200 years old? I don't think so. So we are living in an era where a lot of farms, a lot of barns are kind of in danger, like our barn was, and we ended up losing our barn. The barn, because it wasn't used, my dad built a bigger building that he could fit all of his equipment under and work under. And though I'm grateful that he had that space to stay in out of the elements, the barn fell into disuse. And even though my dad tried his hardest to save it, you know what happens to a building when it's not regularly used and maintained. We ended up losing the barn. And my dad still grieves that. My dad's closing in on 80, and he still grieves that the barn came down. And so, you know, when we think about barns, those can really be a literal and metaphorical image of our stewardship, of what we have in our care and what is there to be taken care of. And so I would ask you, what do you keep in your barns? Because that's the imagery in the parable today. What would you count as what is in your barns? What do you keep? Do you have a literal barn that's stuffed full and you're not even sure what's in there? Do you have a metaphorical barn and there's all these things that you count as being in your care, but they're not in a certain space? Some of you probably have basements and attics. And anybody have that closet, the one you don't open when guests are coming over to the house? That closet that stays shut because if you open it, everything comes flying out? We all have our spaces that can, you know, kind of fill that imagery of the barn. And we can become enslaved to our barns. We can become enslaved to our barns, and our barns are capable of sapping us of joy and of connection with God. Even though on the surface, it might be the very definition of wealth. You may have a barn full of all kinds of awesome stuff. You may have, you know, a field full of cattle. You may have a savings account that just blows everybody else's savings account out of the water. And yet you might find yourself enslaved to the very wealth that you thought would free you. And I think there's a lot of people, as I work with folks, and I've seen it in my own family, in my own life, that our barns can then become things that we are actually enslaved to. I told you either last week or the week before about Brecksville, and I served at the Brecksville Church for 10 years as the youth director, and I worked with a lot of awesome families there, and it was a very upper middle class, wealthy community. They were 15 minutes from downtown Cleveland. I was told when I started at Brecksville that the church had 70 lawyers in it. Can you imagine? And they were still holy. I don't know. One church with 70 lawyers. There were doctors and professors and teachers and professionals, and they all had 9-to-5 jobs that, you know, went to 8 o'clock at night, and, you know, they kind of were living that American dream. And there were a couple of families I know for a fact had these beautiful houses that had these gorgeous facades. You know what I'm talking about? Those McMansions, they might call them, those mini mansions, and maybe not so many. And they're beautiful, and they have the car to match, and they have the cars sometimes to match. And yet when you walked into their house, they had no furniture because they couldn't afford it. They could afford one or the other. They had empty houses. And if that isn't a metaphor for our life as people of faith, the pretty facade that's empty on the inside, and that's, you know, I don't know what metaphor we can work with, because what the scripture today is about contentment, and that is the key to so many things in our life when it comes to our stewardship, when it comes to our caring for what is before us. Because regardless of the facade, if your house is empty, then what kind of quality of life are you living? What kind of quality of life are you living, even though that facade is beautiful? Now, Paul gives us the secret to contentment. If you're like, well, Pastor, what's the secret to contentment? Well, I didn't know, but Paul did. And this is what Paul tells us in Philippians. Not that I'm referring to being in need, for I have learned to be content with whatever I have. I know what it is to have little. I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I've learned the secret of being well-fed and of going hungry, of having plenty, and of being in need. Most of us sitting here have been both. Most of us sitting here have been in those moments of need and in those moments of having what we need, and we've been everything in between. So most of us sitting here have experienced that. And this is what the secret Paul reveals to the success of being content, whether your facade is big or small. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. The strength of the Lord is the key to contentment. The key to contentment is the strength of the Lord. If we view our primary strength as God, then we will be on firm foundation, because our life situation is going to fluctuate. All it takes is one phone call to find that all the plans you made are out the window, doesn't it? All it takes is one diagnosis for suddenly all the beautiful plans you made to be out the window. So if you plan and center your strength on your wealth, on your stuff, on your status, then you are going to be on sinking sand. You're going to be on a very unstable land. And we know as Americans, we fall into this trap of thinking it's bigger, it's better. The more I have, the less likely I'm going to be vulnerable. You know, the more I plan, the better. And it's not bad to plan. I'm not saying that it's bad to plan. It's all good. And we should plan. But ultimately, if you're seeking your strength in that venue, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to be disappointed. But when you lean on the Lord's strength, then miracles happen. Things occur. You can find contentment, whether you're living in a, you know, living in an apartment or living in a mansion, whether you're driving a beater car, whether you're driving a brand new car, whether you have a full bank account, whether you have an empty bank account. And this takes work, my friends. This is not easy stuff that I'm throwing down here. This is difficult, and it takes work to lean on the strength of the Lord. And so that's what Paul is teaching us, because if we look at our, it's all about the lens that we perceive our wealth through. Now, I know people that enough is never enough, and maybe some of you fall into that trap as well. When is your house big enough? When is your bank account big enough? When is your job big enough? You know, and I know people who are at the top of their game, and it's still not enough. So when we think about, is God enough? Are we enough? We need to use a different lens than the world is using, my friends, as Christians. We are not to use the same lens. I remember coming out of Allegheny deciding that I wanted to give 2 years to God in service. Here I am going on, what, close to 30? I was going to give God 2 years of service, and all my friends thought I was nuts because I wasn't going on to grad school. Why? So I could make the big bucks. They all thought I was nuts for taking 2 years to serve God. Because their lens was different than mine, right? I didn't see that 2 years, which now is 30. I didn't see that as waste. In fact, it's been the greatest blessing, accidental bumble-in decision I've ever made, which is most of the time in my life, the greatest blessings are the ones I bumbled into. You know, that was the greatest blessing of my life, was not living by the lens of my friends. And they're all fine. They all had their decisions to make. They all had their lenses to look through. But looking through the lens of the cross, looking through the lens of God's call, I'm so grateful that I did that, and I think as Christians, that's what we're seeking. Because if we view our lens through wealth, then we're always not going to have enough. We're always going to be scarce. We're always going to have that myth of scarcity chasing us that says, you better hold on to it. You better hold on to it. You're going to run out. You're going to run out. You know, who's going to help you then? If you don't help yourself, nobody else is going to help you and be there. And that is all a lie. That is not the truth of God. The truth of God is that God is enough. And God makes sure that we are enough and that we, but sometimes it means that we need to do a little thinking about, have you ever asked yourself what house is a big enough house? What job promotion is a big enough job promotion? You know, what bank account, where am I really happy with? Because it's not just about not having money, it's also about having money, because whatever you have, you've got to organize it. You've got to administrate it. You've got to take care of it. And sometimes if we don't ask ourselves, when is enough enough, then we just never answer that question, and we keep seeking it. And there's no contentment then, because we're building our contentment on the wrong kind of lens. So if we look at our status through the eyes of the Holy Spirit, through the cross, then our lens and our status is going to be very different, and it's going to be based on a whole different set of categories. So Jesus has come, he's approached by a guy who wants him to adjudicate the handling of an inheritance. Apparently his family's fighting over an inheritance. Anybody here been there? Some of you maybe are in the middle of it. It can be awful, painful, it can rip families apart. And this was 2,000 years ago that this inheritance issue was happening, and we still have that occur today. And when he's asked to judge this, Jesus doesn't do what he often does. Jesus, when asked a question, often gives encouragement or healing. He'll answer it directly, or he'll throw the question back at the person, and he'll give another direction to think about. But in this instance, when he's asked about stuff, when he's asked about inheritance, he issues a dire warning. He issues a dire warning that he wants everybody to heed. And this is what he says: take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Be on your guard. And as Christians, we are never to let our guard down when it comes to thinking about our interaction with stuff and our attitude about what do we deserve, what does our pride dictate, what do we think our neighbors are thinking about us, all of that. All of that can lead us to greedy places and scared, fearful places. And that's how we react then in our stewardship. And that is not how the Bible asks us to care for what has been placed in our life. So why do people live in empty houses? Why do people live in empty houses? There's probably a lot of reasons. You know, there's a lot of reasons they have chosen that life. But ultimately, they have chosen over quality of life. They've chosen something over quality of life, over joyful life. They've chosen what their neighbors think, or they've chosen fear, or they've chosen, you know, whatever it is that they felt was worth sleeping on the floor, which I can't think is as much of a quality of life for people living in empty houses. And so when we think about our own barns, what are you, what are you driven by that might be leading you to live in an empty house? Are you burdened with a false perception of your wealth? Is your pride, you know, sometimes your greatest stumbling block is your, not being able to let go of something. Sometimes it's sentimental. Some of us have been given inheritances that we don't want to let go of, even though they're a millstone around our neck and they're sinking us under the ocean, because we feel some sort of obligation to those that left us whatever they left us, even though it has now become a burden. Jesus doesn't want us to be enslaved to those kinds of things. And your loved one, heavens, your loved one didn't give it to you so that you'd be enslaved. And so today, I encourage you to think about your barns and what brings you joy, what brings you a furthering of the mission you have in this world, what furthers your caretaking of your family and the world around you and the people that you share this earth with, and what are millstones around your neck that are dragging you to the bottom of the ocean. Those are really important questions, and I work with a lot of people. One of the biggest questions, especially as the baby boomers are aging, which is my parents' generation, the idea of downsizing. That is a hard, painful, grief-filled event for a lot of people. And if you're going through those questions right now, you're not alone. You're not alone. And I've walked with many, many families that are in those transitional periods of decision that are so painful, but then I see on the other side, I see a freedom that they didn't have because the house was getting to be too much, the utilities were too much, or whatever was too much. And so I'd encourage you today to lay these burdens before God and to get real about your situation, not just in the downsizing world, but overall your real situation, and get real and don't live behind a mask. Stop living behind a mask that you think needs to be there for you to be acceptable, because the cross tells you you're acceptable because Jesus Christ went to the cross for you, not because of the stuff that you have to put out there. And so be honest, not just about God's abundance and scarcity, but about your own. And that honesty may hurt. And I understand that. I've lived in a home where the creditors were calling. I've lived in a home where we weren't sure where bills were going to get paid. I've lived in my own life where I've needed to lean on some help from my parents when I was still single before I married basically a banker that my husband Tony is. He's not really a banker, but I always tease people, if you want your finances to get into shape, give your money to Tony, but he will tell you no, and you may not be speaking to him, you know, after he tells you no, but I'll just throw that out there. He's not here for me to tease. He was at First Service, but really, you know, when we think about these are really serious, you know, tough conversations that we have about getting real with our situation, and where does God want us to go, and have you invited God into that conversation? When was the last time you and your family prayed over your finances, got the checkbook out in the middle of the dining room table and prayed over your checkbook? When was the last time you said to God, what do you want us to do? You know, this is where we're at. What do you ask of us next? And I don't think as Christians we're doing that. I'm not hearing people talk that way. I don't hear Christians talk that way. And I think that we're missing something by not leaning on the strength of God and leaning on our own understanding instead. And so be honest and take stock of your barn, you know, and think about what you're holding on to and why you're holding on to it. Because sometimes there's greedy underpinnings that you didn't even realize were there. You didn't even realize that you were actually being kind of selfish, or you were actually being kind of greedy, or you were kind of hoarding when really God wanted you to open your hands and let go. And so those are hard conversations to have with yourself, but they are so vital to the importance of being healthy when it comes to your stewardship. And so this week I encourage you to take stock of your barns. See what's in there and really get real. Amen.